Okay, if I could get everyone's attention. Good evening. Welcome to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Tim, and I am an alcoholic. I'll go over a few things right now. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for the email or listen to previously recorded meetings at our website, simpleactions.net. For those who care to join me, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to anyone in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and in the bathrooms over to my left in the hallway. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety here tonight? Okay, welcome, welcome. Also, anyone on Zoom, if you raise your hand, someone will chat with you. At this time, if you would, silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, this meeting normally is we have a big book study, and it's an open big book study, and we do it on Monday nights, and we have two speakers so you can attend to. Every 14th week, we do that for 13 weeks. So we go through the steps all through there, and then the 14th week, we always have a supper and a speaker. So, next week, we're starting back on step one. So anyone in the room, if you want to come join us next Monday at 7 o'clock, we'll be starting back on step one. But at this time, I want to welcome, with my honor, Angie M. from Tobaccoville, North Carolina.
My sobriety date's May 2nd, 1994. And thank you so much for asking me. Leanne and David have been very kind. And the food, whoever made that crazy cake, you have Al-Anon potential if you're not one, because that was incredible. Anyway, I'm going to do the best I can to do what the book tells me to do, tell you in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I'm going to do that without lying on purpose. We're going to be done on time. And we'll just see where it goes from there. I do have a sponsor. Her name is Marie. And if you listen, you might can hear her. She's all the way in South Carolina, but she's a little loud. And she helps me with my hearing like that. She'll say things like, honey, did you hear what you just said? And I said, well, did you hear what I said? Anyway, she makes sure I can hear, because sometimes I don't listen is what I understand. All right. I was born in High Point, North Carolina, youngest of three children. And for me, that's the best place for an alcoholic, for me, because my older sister and brother, they were good at things. They studied hard. They practiced. They were in all the different groups and classes. They went to smart kid camp where, like, you electively asked to go study and do stuff in the summer. I couldn't stand them at all. But I could stomp on their feet. They would retaliate. I'd cry and they'd get in trouble. And it was just a little game, I guess, that I was playing. They didn't know they were playing. I think looking back, I believe I was just lazy. I think that's pretty safe to say. I know every year the teachers would tell my mother, Angie has such potential if she just apply herself. And I was a good starter, always a good starter. I mean, just come out of the gate. Great. Everything was right. I looked right. I had all the things, and then I would just fizzle out really quick. I don't know if I ever looked right, but I tried. You know, I had all the right things you were supposed to have. My family gave me every opportunity that we wanted our children to have, and I squandered every single one of them. I remember self-centered fear just being a presence in my life as far back as I can remember, and I don't know why. There's nothing that happened to me at all. Beautiful family, incredible family. I'd have told you when I was drinking, if you had my family, you drink too, you know, fine, wonderful people. My dad traveled a lot, worked hard so we could be comfortable. My mother was and is the most precious person I know. She baked. She was like the Girl Scout mom. She was the church Sunday school mom, just sewed. I mean, precious in every single way. And again, I mean, I think maybe the only thing traumatic was I might've been told no once or twice. And I found out everything wasn't about me, you know, and, that's always upsetting, but, good opportunities. Again, I didn't want to try things because what if I fail? You know, if I can't be the worst, then I'm going to be if I can't be the best, I'm going to be the worst. And just the whole self-centered fear thing. Everything was fine. Having a good time. Life is going on. When I was a couple of years before I took my first drink, my parents split up. It was not a big, I mean, I was selfish. Everything was about me. But I do remember a girl in school, her parents split up and her dad had broken in the house in the middle of the night to try to kidnap her because he wanted her to be with him so badly. And I was like, nobody's kidnapped me. You know what I mean? My definition of love was just crazy, you know, just insane. So anyway, I was a very young girl when I took my first drink. There might've been a drink sip here or there in my home. I don't recall. There was not alcohol present in my home. My dad is what I believe. The big book talks about. He was a heavy drinker. When he started having troubles from his drinking, he could stop for long periods of time. And when he drank after that, it was no problem. He could just dabble. And when I started having troubles with my drinking, he'd say, why don't you stop? Like, because I'm having troubles. I need a drink. I mean, why would I stop? And we didn't see eye to eye a lot at all. I had an aunt who was one of us. She was my favorite person in the world. She was cool, y'all. She had a red or burgundy Monte Carlo with the white interior swivel bucket seats. I mean, I don't know about that. Was cool. She had a CB radio. Is anybody? Okay. So she was cool. 8-track. Everything was happening with her. And every now and then she would disappear. And I'd say, where's Mary? And they'd say, well, she went to dry out. And I was like, well, we didn't go swimming. I don't know what that means. And I know today we had a lot in common, but alcohol growing up, it wasn't a big deal in our home because it just wasn't there. Cool kid across the street, new girl moved in. She had cool hair, cool music, cool everything, cool clothes, cool friends, and I was going to be cool too. She's a little bit older than me, and I was hanging out over there, and I don't know, they're listening to the music, and I'm listening to the music. They take a drink, and they act silly and have fun. I took a drink, and things locked in for my life, you know? It just locked in. I'm sure I looked silly and stupid and a mess, but I didn't feel that way. I felt comfortable. That night, a few things happened that kept happening because that was my life. Everything happened to me. It was never my behavior that caused anything. But that night, everybody in the neighborhood knew Angie found alcohol. Police were involved and my mother was mortified. And you can hit repeat on that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Just everybody always knew I never drank quietly or pretty. I wanted to be, you know, one of those people. But anyway, so I hit the road quick. I mean, I hit the ground running. I didn't become an everyday drinker. I was a young, young girl, but I did seek out the people who thought it was okay for a young girl to be drinking. And I thought it was because I was so mature. These older people wanted to drink and hang out with me that I was, you know, cool and mature. But I think I was just like a little drunk entertaining monkey or something, you know, like give her a drink, see what she's going to do now, you know, and I'd spin off and do something stupid. But anyway, I started staying gone not too long after I started drinking. The rest of the world thought it was running away. But for me, I was just staying gone. I would go and I would get what I needed to get and I would do it as long as I could. And if I hit a wall or got in trouble or needed something or ran out or things got too crazy, I could always go home. And I'm not proud of the way I treated my family by any means, but that's what I did. Self-centered fear and selfishness and self-centeredness, all of it is just, I was just eat up with it. So I would stay gone and they would be terrified and I'd come back and start a fight or whatever, you know, and come back in the door and blame everybody for my troubles. If you didn't do this, I wouldn't have did that. And on and on and on. When I was 15, they put me in my first treatment center and I was not ready. I hit their bottom. They were a high bottom bunch of folks. My bottom was way down here, but I hit my family's bottom pretty quick. And I remember at the time my dad told my mother, you know, all she needs is a swift kick. She doesn't need to go to treatment, do all this stuff. And he might've been right, but I did put myself in a lot of swift kick situations and that didn't cure this thing. But, so I went to that place. I was angry and I stayed, I don't know, just a few days. I found another girl who was just as stupid and hateful as me. And we snuck out of that treatment center. We broke out, you know, and it was crazy. It was a locked facility because it was for adolescents. It should have been locked. I didn't need to be out. But anyway, we got out or got loose, whatever it is when you get, is it loose? And we went down to this little store because it was in a town I'd never been to. And we went to this little store where there was a payphone, which is when you're tethered to the wall, if you're not familiar with that. And we made a phone call to somebody who was willing to come get us. And we just had to sit and wait, you know, just we told them where we thought we were. And they were coming to get us. And of course, they had called the police because we shouldn't be loose. And the police officer pulled up and we were sitting in front of a chain link fence. And I said, we got to go. She said, jump the fence. I said, okay. And she ran and jumped on that fence, climbed up, jumped just like a gazelle, just a beautiful, smooth moose. I ran and jumped on that fence and kind of hung there like a cat. And I fell back down and the officer asked me if I was ready. And I said, yes, sir. And we went back to treatment. But they gave me opportunities for all those sports, all those things. And I refused them all, you know. I should have, that girl probably did the sports, but anyway, I went back to this place, but I can tell you in just a few days, you know, I got the coalition of the stupid and the willing together and we left again. And this time I stayed gone and I started a pattern, another pattern of just using people completely up. You know, there was four or five of us that left and, whenever somebody's resources ran out or they didn't have something I needed or could use, I was kind of done with them. And I'm not proud of it. That's what I was turning into because the most important thing to me was feel okay. Like I had already violated all that stuff they taught me to be right and true. When I was young, they took me to church. I felt like they were really excessive about the church business. They went all the time. And I remember my sister and my brother got something tangible from that. You know, my mother and my grandmother, they just had it, you know, they didn't wear it. It wasn't, they just owned it. That's who they were. It was just, they had this beautiful relationship with the God of their understanding. And I remember thinking, I just missed this boat. You know, this, I'm too something for this. So I'd already violated those things that they tried to teach me that were right and true and feeling drunk, feeling, getting alcohol in my system made me feel okay. Everything was all right. And I didn't have to worry about any of that. So I stayed gone that time for quite some time. And I would call every now and then. And, you know, just the arrogance. Are you ready to meet my demands? Like, are you all going to just back off and let me do what I want to do? And they'd say, no, Angie, oh, please, please. And I'd hang up. And at the time, there was no call, whatever, you know, they couldn't figure out where I was. And I'd wait a little bit longer. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was holding me hostage. You do what I want or the girl's going to get it, you know. And I would I would hold myself hostage and I would punish people. You know, they loved me and I would absolutely just punish them for that. You know, if I'd stay gone long enough, they would go from angry to afraid and afraid I couldn't negotiate with. You know, I'd make this list of demands and if you do this, then I'll come there. So anyway, that was how I did things. Moved out when I was 15-ish because, again, I was I forgot to tell you how cool I was. I was very cool and I was very smart. And I moved out and just did the thing. I didn't need school anymore. I was pretty smart. Started getting some decent jobs. My my family would connect me to someone, would hook me up with an opportunity, lots of opportunities. I finished school at a night thing somewhere. It was, I think I was the longest running adult high school student they had, but I found this one time. Drinking interferes with stuff. But they got me several jobs. For some reason, several of them were in insurance companies for a while. And I would go to work and I would dress the part, you know. My family would make sure they could clean me up and point me in the right direction. And I would go in and they'd say, boy, that Angie, she is a go-getter. Look at her, you know, she's got a lot of potential. And, you know, I was in there with these people who I might have dressed the part, but inside I had already felt like I had broken what was in there. And I'd be there with those women who had their sweater sets on and they were accessorized appropriately. And they made casseroles and they were just those people who probably went home and watched Jeopardy and went to bed and did what they were supposed to do. And I despised them, but I was afraid of them. You know, I was intimidated by them because I just really felt like if they knew what I was, they would hate me. And so I don't know if it was a week, 2 days, three, never long enough to get insurance. But at some point I would need to drink. You know, a lot of times I could make it to lunchtime and do okay. You know, if I could just make it to 5 o'clock kind of business. But there would come a time every time I had one of these opportunities that I would need to drink immediately. You know, it might just be one of the casserole women saying good morning. I'd think, well, what do you mean by that? You know, judge me. Think you're better than me, you know, but that fear would just strike, that self-centered fear. And I would just need to level out. And that's what I'd say. I just got to get right, you know? So I would disappear. I would evaporate. I'd just be gone. And that's what I did over and over again. When things got too tough, I got to go. So I was really healthy. So I attracted really healthy individuals and it's really healthy relationships. And I'll just tell you that, you know, for a long time, I'd find somebody who was a little bit sicker than me, you know, on the outs, and then they'd say, oh, boy, look at her trying to help him. I'd say, I know. And, anyway, after a while they'd be going, why are you with her? She is crazy. Get away from her. I'd out sick them and I'd go a rung down. Anyway, over and over the craziness goes, I ran into, and I just call him Mr. Sick because it was the male me, you know, just the perfect storm of absolute crazy. And that was my world for a long time. The most important thing was drinking and running the roads. That was the most important. That's a core of any relationship that I was there for. I was 21-ish. We had a daughter. I lived, the place I lived, they wouldn't let me take her to, so I had to take her to my mother's house. It wasn't safe, they felt. They were very close-minded. It wasn't safe. but my mother was kind enough to let me take her back to her house. And in my mind, you know, I had been not drinking for quite some time in order to have this child. And I felt like I had done the planet a favor. And, I mean, it is a good thing to not drink. But my attitude was, everybody just needs to give me a minute. You know, I get to have a little bit of grace now. It's my time. If you could just watch her for a few minutes, I'll be okay. And I meant it when I said it. I really did. I'm going to be back in about an hour. I meant it so many times when I said it. I was just going to go drive around her neighborhood, get two beers, knock the edge off, and go back. But once I start, all bets are off. Once I start, I can't stop. And those 2 hours turned into several days. And I think my daughter was maybe just a couple of days old then. And that's another pattern, you know, coming to and just hating myself so much. And instead of saying, I don't like what I'm doing, can you help me? I would just charge in the door and you're trying to take her away from me, even though I left her, you know, just all that crazy stuff. I told you never to dress her in stripes, you know, just crazy stuff. Just kick in the door and scream a lot and make sure they know it's their fault. And then I could waltz off and be the wounded victim. I was the biggest victim ever until I worked a four step. That'll remove the victim badge and it leaves a mark. But that's what it took for me. So I ran into Mr. Clean, and I call him that because this guy didn't park in handicap. He paid taxes. I don't know about y'all, but that's pretty fancy in my little world I was in. Had a real job, you know, all that stuff. And so my family was really excited. Anybody that knew me was excited. They were like, look at Angie. She's going to be driving a minivan, you know, soon. And she's going to do what she's supposed to be doing. And it's like, yeah, go me. And I moved with this person around his whole family. And they all would bake together, and they would watch movies. They went roller skating together. And I think they did potato sack races. I didn't see it, but I mean, that kind of stuff was happening. And they would drink two beers in the evening, two beers. And then watch Jeopardy, go to bed, get up the next day. They were all in this two beer plan. It looked, I mean, I was counting, I was watching. They didn't announce their two beer plan, but it's what it looked like to me. And I tried my best just to do the two beer plan with them. But once I start, all bets are off. Once I start, there's no two beer plan. So anyway, I drank the way I drank. I couldn't do the two beer thing for very long, and kind of showed out, and it was a bad scene. So under the cover of darkness, I took off from there. It was actually in Virginia and needed to go back to North Carolina. I had Stephanie, my daughter, with me, and I always kept her little Sesame Street suitcase packed and ready to go, locked and loaded, because you never know what's going to happen. And a friend of mine came and rescued us from these horrible, nice people, and just evaporated out of their lives and went back to doing what I do. Repeat, repeat, repeat all the stuff. I can tell you that every now and then I would get desperate. Every now and then I would see that I need to do something different, and I would call a friend of mine and say, hey, you know, what do you think I should do? And I might go to a meeting here or there. Usually it was just to, you know, see, watch me, I'm doing good now, or I'm trying, you know, everybody forgive me. Every now and then I would call, rarely, but I would call my mother and ask her if she could find somewhere to help me. And she'd say, don't move, you know, please don't move, you know, we got her. And then I overreacted. I'm sorry, a false alarm, I'm good. You know, I ate yesterday, I'm feeling better, you know, whatever. And, just continuously just terrifying and disappointing. And I was too ashamed to be around my father. I'd have told you he was some horrible person, but he wasn't. He was just very disappointed to see what I was doing to myself and to his grandchildren. My sister, I would tell you a lot of cruel things about her. None of them were true. She was just somebody who loved her mother and saw me hurting her mother, taking advantage of her mother, ripping her mother off. So that my relationships were no good with anybody. Everything was crazy and upside down. There at the end, my mother and my grandmother cut me off. They were done, and they were talking about what they needed to do with the children. The stupidest thing ever. Just things were happening that were crazy. You know, I remember taking the children to this little daycare with that last good try, that last job that was going to fix everything. If you'll just do this, I promise I'll never do it again. You know, I was always starting over. I swear I'll never do it again. This time it's going to be different. I swear it's going to be different, over and over and over. And I remember taking the children to the daycare, and I still remember the woman's name because I had such a resentment towards her. She was good and kind and probably had casseroles in her car. And, you know, she did things with the children that I should have been doing, you know? But I remember walking in one morning and she said, Miss Apperson, don't you know what day it is? And I said, yes, I do. But what are you talking about? You know? And she told me it was my daughter's birthday and I was supposed to bring cupcakes. And, that's just to quit. You just don't show up to work and drink day. I mean, that's just to blow everything off. I'm a victim and the world's horrible. And you know, I got to drink enough to be okay with that day. So anyway, things like that were happening over and over and again, over again. So I don't know, spiritually, there was just so much bankruptcy there, and the guilt, shame, and remorse was incredible. And I was just trying to stay okay, just to keep the pain off, you know, along at the beginning, maybe it was fun and roller coasters and all that. But by then I was just trying to keep the pain off for a little while just to make it stop. And there was one night when I decided that all my pain was because of him. Just insert him. All my pain was because of him. And if he were to go away, I'd be fine. And as a matter of fact, if he were to die, all my pain would go too. So I decided to kill him. Y'all don't be afraid. It's fine. I could not tie my shoes, much less commit a successful homicide. But I was going to run him down in the parking lot of where we lived. So I'm in my little car and I'm drinking and I'm sitting and I'm waiting and I'm drinking and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and drinking. And he finally comes out or in of the apartments. I really don't know, but he had one of his pals with him. And this was my chance. I dropped that joker down in drive and I punched it. And my little car went across. It was not operating properly ever. It was like sometimes at the stoplight, you know, the clutch would stop clutching and I'd have to get out and put brake fluid in the clutch thing, you know, and pump it up. And then you get. So yeah, I was using that to try to kill him and it didn't work out. And by the time I got to him, he just stepped out of the way. And you could do a lot of things, but like I was really upset about it. And he pointed and giggled like with his friend and laughed at me. And that was really traumatic. But it's such a dumb thing. But I consumed everything I could that night. I drank everything I could. I did everything I could to feel okay. And the pain would not stop. It would not get any better. It actually got worse. And that was a new trick for me, you know, because normally at least I could dumb it down a little bit. But things got worse. I was absolutely insane. I was absolutely broken. And one more time, I called my mother and God bless her. She answered and she responded. And I said, I need some help. And she said, please don't move. Like she probably didn't think I was going to sit still. But I said, okay. And she sent my brother to get me and took me back to her house. And the next morning they put me on the phone with a woman who ran a little treatment center. And she said, honey, do you think you could not drink till you get here? It was going to be a couple of days, I guess. And I said, I don't know. And for me, that was a big thing because I had a smart comeback for everything, but there was some willingness there. And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, honey, why don't you ask God to keep you sober till you can get here? A week before, 10 minutes late, I don't know how big that window of willingness was, but there was a time very close to that where if somebody had said those words to me, I'd have flew hot and been very cruel. But I was broken and I just said, yes, ma'am. So they took me to that place. And when I got there, they didn't give me that head to toe. I don't know about where y'all been drinking, but where I was drinking, sometimes I'd come in looking a little crazy and they kind of look at me like, what's she going as, you know? And when I walked in there, when I feel like I crawled in there, they just looked at me with love and they showed me a better way of life. They gave me a foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been able to build a life off of. You know, I would listen to them talk, especially that one woman. She'd been sober about as long as God, I think. She'd been sober a long time. But when she shared her story, I knew she had been where I had been. She might not have been in the same place, wearing the same clothes, but she had felt that way. Like, you don't make that stuff up. I knew it when I looked in her eyes. I knew it when she talked about it. But then the way she interacted with God's children then, that day, you know, she no longer lived in that pain. She no longer lived in that place. I knew it by the way she talked to people, by the look in her eyes, by the way she treated God's children. And I desperately wanted what she had, not stuff. I just wanted to feel like she felt. She could also do a trick that was cool. She could walk through a room full of stupid and not get a drop on her. She'd just run right through it, you know, because we had a lot of stupid run around there, you know, it was me. But anyway, I left there with kind of instructions. I had this list of things I was supposed to do every single day if I wanted to stay sober. And there were some things that were kind of a no-brainer I didn't need to be doing. And I left there trying my best to do what they told me to do. Get up in the morning and ask God to remove the obsession and desire. Get with the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to a meeting. Get in my book. Do the best to work the steps with the sponsor and thank God at night. And I tried my best. It was like just watching my feet, you know, get up in the morning. I got to do this thing. I got to pray. I got to whatever. I got to feed the little people. They have to be fed and take them wherever they're going. And, you know, just trying to one day at a time, one foot in front of the other, just trying my best to not screw this up. That was what my thoughts were. Because see, when I went to that place, I remember thinking, if this doesn't work, at least they can tell my children she tried. Because that's really how I felt. And it might have just been my alcoholic drama, because I'm good at that, right? But that's how I felt. I was so broken. So I did what they said to the best of my ability. I got a sponsor. I started going to meetings. I got a home group. And I learned that that these things are portable. You know, I got that sponsor and started working the steps and trying my best to follow directions. We did that fourth and fifth. I found out a lot about me. I was kind of surprised. It was, in fact, not the other people. She gleefully told me that, I think, a lot. I went to do the formal amends. I don't know. I don't remember how long I've been sober. But there was this list of amends, you know, and we did the thing or whatever, and we came to the one, and this was the friend who came to rescue me in Virginia, you know, and this friend who would help me out a lot. And the last time I talked to him, he had said, "Why don't you go to AA?" And I was like, "Why don't you stop talking?" So we decided I need to seek this person out and make amends. And I contacted this person's family, and they said, "We really think it's great that you're not drinking. The world's a better place, but why don't you just leave him alone? The best amends you can make is to never bother this person again." It's like, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. And I went to my sponsor. I was like, it's not fair. They don't know how to do this. And she said, they don't have to. Your job is to stay willing. And if it's God's will, he'll put you in his path or him in yours. And she always did that. Take me back to the book. It's kind of annoying, because I wanted to have a new crisis that wasn't, I mean, something unique, but it was always in here. The solution, always. She'd say, "Well, have you prayed about it?" "Okay, yeah, but what do I do?" "Need to pray about it." "But what do I do?" "Pray about it." Gosh, sometimes they couldn't hear very well. So anyway, I'm going to meetings. I got a home group. I'm trying to learn how to do this thing, to be accountable, to be a part of that group. I got to learn that it wasn't all about me. I have a voice, but I don't have to be right, you know, and I have a responsibility. And those are skills in the home group that I got to learn that are portable again, and I could take to a job and take to other places in my life. Everything about my world that I know, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got married, y'all. And I mean, it doesn't sound like much, but that's not something that was not on my radar. I can tell you that. My husband's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous too. And we were going to have the AA household, the AA family. We painted our den what? Big Book Blue. It's been a minute. We had all these kids, his two, my two, and then we had one. We had all these girls. And the kids would play, you know, going to AA meeting and who's going to get to chair, and, you know, just... They would play count the big books. I mean, all kinds of, you know, it was a lot. And it was great. It was good. But, you know, we would call each other sponsors like it was the FBI tip line, you know. Bobby's not working the steps right now. Whatever. Anyway, it was fun. But, you know, the good news is our solution was the same solution. And what we wanted was the same thing, and that was to live sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the center of our world. That is what we built our lives around. Finally ran into that same woman, actually. And well, I don't know. We were crazy about something. It was Tuesday. I don't know. Something was happening. And she said, "You know what I think y'all need to do?" She said, "Angie, if you will have a God of your understanding, a sponsor, and work these steps. And Bobby, if you'll have a God of your understanding, a sponsor, and work these steps, and they can't be each other, if you will do that separately, then you can both enjoy the benefits of this program together." And we found that to be true. Now I still have to dabble in his business because, I mean, it's a hobby and I'm good at it. but that's not my job today. So we've got all these children and we're trying to raise them. We're trying to figure out how to just live life and going to meetings all the time, dragging the children to meetings. And I've got to take the children to school, to the little people's school. And I don't know how to explain it, but other than the casserole moms were there and they were like professional moms. I don't mean moms who had professional jobs. They were pro moms. Their pocketbooks were like a kindergarten store. I mean, they had, you know what I mean? Those moms, they like their kids were allergic to all these things. I didn't know. I just fed my kids stuff. You know, they knew everything. They could fashion a pup tent out of their bean. And so I would go in there and I'd think, God, they're going to judge me. They're going to know what I am. You know, if I talk to them for 2 seconds, they're going to know I'm a drunk and I'm just not drinking. And it just craziness. I would feel like when I was going into school, you know, there was going to be an announcement. Attention, there's an alcoholic in the building. Please remove your children. Don't look her in the eyes. And I was so intimidated, you know. But one day at a time of just doing what those women told me to do, one day at a time of following directions, I was able to walk through that. I would sit in my car and I would ask God to walk in with me. I would do that coming into meetings for the longest time because I knew the solution was here. I knew that y'all loved me, but I was terrified. You know, that self-centered fear can be so, so, so strangling and heavy. So I'd ask God to remove that fear and direct my thinking to what he'd have me be and go in with me. I just did my best to follow directions. I still do. I'm not always great at it, but did the best. So we're raising these little people and we're trying our best to have a life that's grounded in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to make amends to my family, the formal thing with my dad. But when I was a little over a year sober, I guess. He got really sick and asked me to attend some medical stuff with him. And we got some really bad news one day. And I mean, it was pretty bad. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. But what y'all been giving me just came out. And we talked about God's grace and God's will. And he said, my gosh, I wish I had something for my life like you've got for yours. And I didn't see change. You know, I was just trying to follow directions and I look up every now and then and go, wow, this is different. One day at a time. We had a really great relationship when he passed away. And I'm grateful for that. There was a time that would have had to have been about me because my pain always meant that everybody needed to stop what they were doing and, you know, watch my crazy show. I didn't have to do that then. I got to walk through it and honor him with my behavior rather than destroy everybody else with my pain. So that was different. I try my best to continue making amends to my mother. I try. You know, we spent a lot of time today. My time with her, I try to make it about her and not me. We will walk through her backyard and she will point out everything she's planted in the last year. And I'm interested in each of them because that makes her feel good. And that's okay. I'm a train wreck still. We have this thing at Christmas in our world and I don't know, it's not a real game, but whoever gives my mom the best gift wins. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no rules, but you can see the face and we're going, you know, I won several years ago. I got her tickets to the symphony in Greensboro. And like, it was my sister's face was like, oh, you win, you know, and I won. And so I took her because here I am, I'm sober and I'm doing right things and I'm going to be the child of the year. And we get there and we're walking through the parking lot. And I looked around and said, Mom, I think we're a little overdressed. She said, oh no, we're not, like the whole planet is underdressed, but we're fine. And so I said, okay. And we keep walking and this man stopped there, the parking attendant. He said, are you going in here? I said, we're going to the symphony. He said, where's your car? And I said, what's up? He said, go get your car. And he turned to my mother very kindly. He said, ma'am, you can stay in here. I was like, what's wrong with him? He said, you were taking this woman to a wrestling match. And so anyway, my amends go like that sometimes. But we got her the right place and she was fine. And we were in fact dressed properly and everything was good. Like I'm still me, you know, I'm a train wreck on a good day, but I can tell you that I've learned how to be an employee in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to be a mother, a friend, just anything that I am that's good, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went back to school. I didn't go back. I went to school in sobriety a lot, a long time. And I get to do things that I feel good about today. Wound up in a career. I'm honored to work at a place that I work with, the people I work with. And I'm grateful. It's God's grace in my life. I've gotten to raise those girls. And I said, it was so scary and intimidating going to those schools, but one day at a time, I would walk in asking God to walk with me. And one day at a time, I could hold my head up and look at those other people. You know, those women were just living their lives. And I don't know, maybe they didn't feel good about them some days, you know, but we're all God's kids and I'm no better or worse. I would walk in there one day at a time and I got to where I was comfortable. I was like, at every ball game, you know, I was there present. I'm still never going to be professional anything, mom. Right. But I'm sober, you know, and I've gotten to be a part of it and I've gotten to have the house where all the kids wanted to be, you know, they all felt comfortable at our house. All the girls' friends knew we were in Alcoholics Anonymous and they thought it was cool and come hang out, you know, our girls grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. One of them chose to be in Alateen for quite some time. One's in Al-Anon now. When the one that was in Alateen for a while, I was taking her to a meeting one night. We had to go way out in the country to pick up a little girl that was going to the meeting. And this little girl got in the van and she was kicking and flicking the lights and punching the things and just pushing every button in what? The minivan. And so we got to the meeting. I dropped him off. I did my meeting, came back on him. We went all the way back out, dropped her off. And when we left her and we were heading home, I said, man, she's a nice girl, but I thought I was going to have to tie her up. She was driving me crazy. And my daughter was probably 13, 14, maybe. She did not turn her head and look at me. But she said, mom, you know what? Both of her parents are alcoholics and neither one of them are sober. I think she's doing the best she can do right now. Don't you? And I was like, I can whip your sponsor, I can beat your sponsor down. But you know, that's the benefit and maybe not so much of raising your children in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because they, if I didn't always show them the best the members of Alcoholics Anonymous had. Another daughter was going to work and live overseas for a year. And in the interviews of the program she was in, they asked her about spirituality and religion. And she said, she told them whatever she told them about her religious heart and beliefs and soul. But she said, you know what? The God of my understanding comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. My parents are both members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where I learned about God. That's where I learned that we're supposed to try to help each other. And so I don't know what we gave her, but y'all gave her a lot. One day at a time, I've gotten to become a person I didn't know I wanted to be. I finally got to learn to be a person who's comfortable in my own skin. I don't have to drink to feel okay in my skin. Guess what? I can be afraid. I can have some self-centered fear and I don't have to destroy the planet over it. I go talk to God, hit my knees, do what I'm supposed to do and walk through it. I don't have to walk through it by myself. That's news. That's a big deal to me in my life. I'm a Gigi now. It's a grandmother. It's only because he's old and I'm not, but bless him. We have lots of grandchildren. Again, I didn't know I wanted to be that. I didn't know that that would be the coolest thing ever. Had no clue. God is good. You know, all I do is just keep my head down and do the right thing, you know, and look up and wow, life's changed. Things are good. So I guess out of the blue, I think I was 18 years sober. I got a phone call from a woman and she said that the person I tried to make amends to back when I was about a year sober was dying and had asked to see me. And I got to go make those amends. I got to go tell that person how much they meant to me and thank them. I guess God really thought I was going to screw those amends up, and it took 18 years for me to get well enough to get those amends. But that doesn't happen anywhere else in my world. You know, that's a God thing to me. That's living in this program the best I can. Some not fun things have happened, and somebody I love a lot was harmed several years ago, and I got really angry. But I kept coming to meetings. I got angry at God, but I kept asking him to help me. We didn't talk a lot. I was mad, but I would ask God to be with me, and I would thank him at night. Very brief. But one day at a time, I kept doing that, and I came out on the other side. You know, again, my pain, it was a truckload. It was a horrible experience. But my pain didn't mean I had to destroy the planet. See, before, and the thought in there was, I need to go hurt somebody. Somebody I love has been hurt. I need to go hurt back, you know? My program says that would have been about me. That would have been selfish. That would have been to make me feel better, and it would have harmed her. So one day at a time, I had to do exactly what I'm supposed to do in this program. And we walked through it. And I got to be there for her instead of making her situation about me. And that was different for me. A few years ago, a lot changed in my life. I had to make a decision that was hard to make, but it was the right thing to do, and it was not a popular thing in my world. And things changed. But the good news is I have a sponsor and the God of my understanding and my core people who surrounded me and held on to me and walked through it with me. I've not found any situation where I had to be by myself since I got sober. God's grace has been there. Sometimes I can't see it, you know, on this side of it, but if I'll just keep walking, I can always see God's grace on the other side, usually partway through it. So today I get to do and be a lot of things. Today I get to be an employee, just one among. I don't have to be that's best or the worst. Today I get to be a friend, I think I'm a fairly okay friend. I get to be a mom to grown kids, and that's a lot more fun. They're a lot of fun. I get to be a GG to small people, and that is more fun. I can report that. You know, I'm a sister today. I'm not threatened by, I'm not angry at my sister today. I love her for what and who she is. And that's okay. We have a good relationship today. I'm a wife, probably not the greatest at it, but you know, we're still hanging out and trying. You know, I get to be a lot of things. I'm a daughter. I get to be the person I wanted to be. You know, my life is so different, and it still, even after all this time, still blows me away. Maybe that's why God wanted me to bother y'all tonight. I don't know, but it's still amazing that I get to live this life, and it's all because I screwed it all up in the beginning, you know? So one day at a time, I got to be here, and because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to do all those things and be all those things, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. And I'm super grateful that we are done. Thank y'all so much.
Angie, that was awesome. Okay. How about one more for Angie? Okay, let's see. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services district area, and the General Service Office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help alcoholics who still suffer. So the basket's going around. While we're doing it, a couple other things. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to the fostering and secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Now, right now, does anyone have any AA announcements? And Jen, Benita, thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. It does go into harmony, but this Sunday, the Unity group will be having a picnic out at City View Park. If Virginia Beach off Kensville Road from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You bring anybody you want to, you know, you can even bring your pets. But pets must be kept on the leash, or you will get fined.
All right, thank you. Anybody else? Any more announcements?
Alfred Alcoholic.
Nope. Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Also, you want to talk to Angie after the meeting, she'll be up here, I think, after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. All right. Also, I'll say this, and I'll say it afterwards. If anyone would help us when we fold this thing up, you can see a home group member that can show us what to do. I appreciate it. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website. Again, simpleactions.net. Real quick, let's see here. In closing, I want to thank Angie again, and we'll finish with the Lord's Prayer in a second, but I have a volunteer. Joe's going to come up and read the last two paragraphs of one.
Everybody, my name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic. That was fantastic. Thank you so very much for being here with us tonight. This is from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Thanks, Joe. How about everybody one more time for Andrew? Okay, like I said, after the Lord's Prayer, we're going to break this down. If anyone wants to stay and help, we appreciate it. You can see a home group. If anyone would like to join us, we're going to form a giant circle around the building, and we'll start with the Lord's Prayer. Oh, yes. And please thank the speaker when you're leaving.
You brought us here together.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thy kingdom, power, and glory, right and ever. Amen. Please come back.